on their feet, waving their blue Dodger towels. 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, he got him. 5 strikeouts through 3 dominant innings for Clayton Kershaw. 0-2 on the way to Josh Reddick. Kershaw drops down and freezes him with a knee-high fastball. Man, what an inning that was for Clayton Kershaw. Still tied at 1. 2 down, a man at first, and the pitch, and Turner lost a fly ball to left. It's hit pretty well. It is gone! 2-run shot, Justin Turner. Dodger Stadium erupts. First pitch, a swing and a high fly ball right center. This should do it. Puig wants it. Puig has it. And the Dodgers take game 1.
I don't know if you can decipher between a postseason start and a World Series start thing. I feel like every game is so much more magnified. Definitely feels good to say it was a World Series, and it feels good to say we're 1-0, and we got to come back tomorrow and do it again. Try to get that first inning under your belt. Fortunately, I got out of that, and then, CT hitting that home run, first pitch of the game. It almost settled us all in a little bit, I think, and just getting that momentum early is huge, and the crowd kind of feed off that. It was definitely as good a start as we could have hoped for.
Tonight was one of those nights, I think the first time in a while, that we've really seen all 3 of his pitches synced up. He just was repeating the delivery, held the velocity, was throwing the baseball where he needed to, where he wanted to. Very talented team over there, and for him to get ahead, keep him off balance, work him front to back, up and down to all quadrants, this was a special night for Clayton.
LeBron winning traffic to clear, he buries it for 3. LeBron goes right at the rookie, takes his time and scores. Crowder needs it. Sticks it for 3. JR could use one. Swish is back. They right now run this crew. That's his sweet spot. That's 2. Yeah. Give him a backstop. Wide open 3. Got it.
Yeah.
Here comes Jeff Green. Open 4 for 2. Korver came to the ball. Ready to fire. And drains it for 3. Korver again. Good again. And the Cavaliers are going to dribble out the clock. Had to work to get it. But that's okay.
I'm looking for my guys a little bit more when I'm starting at the point, especially in transition, kind of being more of a precision passer, not kind of, full speed ahead in transition. I'm kind of looking and seeing what's going on, getting my guys involved. I try to stay in attack mode when need be, and then once I see the high hand start going for my guys and get on the ball.
It's another opportunity to go out there and get it right for once. For me, it's about taking these opportunities that coach has been able to give me in a league where not a lot of guys get these, and maximizing it for once. I feel like I'm definitely getting better, and I'm on the path of developing myself into a guy who can win in this league. But it's about eliminating, obviously, the turnovers and the plays that are stopping us from winning games, and finally going out there and completing a game. It's been a good 3 weeks since I've been able to go out there in a fourth quarter and attempt to win a game, and I'm looking forward to having a complete game for once.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure this out now, Mr. Cushlin. I listened to that montage. Who was the voice at the very end?
That would be Deshaun Kizer.
That would be Deshaun Kizer. Okay, that's just a little weird to me. Deshaun Kizer, they did it to him again, by the way.
Yep.
Of course. They did it to him again. Hugh Jackson is attempting, in my opinion, to ruin this kid before his career ever gets off the ground. They yo-yo him yet again, talking about Deshaun Kizer, and that's the reason I'm being a little facetious here. Who was that at the end who was talking? If he is afraid, as he's talked about there, if he is afraid to make mistakes, if he is afraid to have a turnover, to throw an interception, to fumble the football, if he's being made to be so afraid of a single mistake that's going to have him yanked back to the bench again, how can he possibly be expected to succeed? I don't know if there is a way to ruin a quarterback, a young, promising quarterback, no matter how badly he's played. I don't know if there's a way to ruin a quarterback more completely than the way Hugh Jackson is ruining this particular quarterback. And I say that not to be defensive of Deshaun Kizer, because he is Central Catholic's own. I say that out of legitimate, if this was going on in Buffalo, if this was going on to a quarterback, not even that particular quarterback, in Seattle or in Washington, D.C. or in Houston or anywhere else, I would be saying the same thing. I don't know that it's possible to ruin a young quarterback any more completely than Hugh Jackson is doing in this rookie season for Deshaun Kizer. Can you believe the roller coaster of emotions, the roller coaster of feelings, confidence, you know, just, you know, back and forth between confidence and I don't want to say lack of confidence. I'm struggling for a word here. Confidence or insecurity. I'll put it that way. I don't know that you can do that any worse than Hugh Jackson is doing this for DeShone Kizer. Kush, do you agree?
I absolutely agree, Bob. I mean, this is ridiculous what he is doing.
I was almost mad at the same time as I was glad.
Yeah.
That I read this today that Browns announced DeShone Kizer will return to the starting role against the Vikings in London. I was almost mad at, you know, I was first, my first thought is good. They shouldn't start Cody Kessler or Kevin Hogan. They should start him. But then I was mad because, again, what message are you sending this kid? Yeah, we're going to start you, but you throw a pick in the first half, you're done. I kind of just want them to say, look, we want you to learn, and you're going to learn better from the bench for the rest of the season or for the next three or four games until you learn a little bit more about protecting the football, or you're our guy through thick and thin, interceptions or touchdowns, doesn't matter. I want them to do one or the other, and they're doing either one.
Yeah, and for me, my personal opinion on this, Bob, is it has to be the latter. The minute you named him the starter for week one, it had to be the latter. You have to keep him in there unless he's actually hurt. This is the worst possible thing, bringing him in, pulling him, starting him again, and maybe starting somebody else. That's just utterly ridiculous, and I think long-term, that kind of stuff would do more to wreck a guy's confidence. Never mind the lack of talent. That is on the Browns. That has nothing to do with this. But just bringing him in and out, not knowing if he's going to be starting, not knowing if, as you said, if he throws one pick, is Hugh Jackson going to bench him? I think that's worse from the confidence perspective than saying, okay, we're going to bench you for a couple weeks or maybe longer so you can, you know, sit back and learn it. I think what he's doing now is, I agree with you, is the worst kind of thing. And again, for me to circle it back around, for me anyway, the minute they named him the starter for week one, the policy should have been, you're our guy, end of story, you're only coming out if you're hurt.
Which is exactly what Hugh Jackson said it was going to be.
Right.
And that's the most frustrating thing, you know, about this. And look, I don't care if you are a Browns fan or not. And I don't care if you're a fan of Central Catholic, and this is a personal thing to you. And I don't care if you're a friend of DeShone Kizer or a classmate of his from Central Catholic. I don't care who you are. This is just the wrong way to go about developing a quarterback. They named him the starter at the beginning of the year, as you said, in game one, and Hugh Jackson pledged. I don't have the quote in front of me, but I'm sure I could find it in no time. But they essentially said, Hugh Jackson essentially said, we are going to ride with this, with DeShone, through thick and thin. Whatever it takes, we're going to do because he is going to learn to get better each and every week. And that's what this is all about. I'm going to develop him. I'm going to help develop him to become the kind of professional we want. He's not going to be looking, I'm paraphrasing some of this now, he's not going to be looking over his own shoulder. We are going to understand that he's a rookie. He's not going to make plays all the time. He's going to make mistakes some of the time. But we are committed to him. That is the only way, Jim, I could not agree with you more. That is the only possible way to justify giving him the starting job right out of training camp, which I would not have. I think we're probably still on the record. You probably still have tape of this, Jim, or podcast. You recall, I said I wouldn't have done this yet. I would have used Brock Osweiler in the manner that you have him to be that bridge, at least to start for the first half of the season to see where things go or to see how bad he was. That's the reason you have a veteran on the roster. You don't bring in a rookie starting quarterback or a rookie quarterback like DeShone Kizer with two other unproven, essentially, rookies in Kessler and Hogan and say, we have no veteran guidance or leadership here for any of you. You're all going to have to figure out as you go. And that's what they did to DeShone Kizer while pledging, as I said, pledging to ride with him and to roll with him through mistakes, through ups and downs and highs and lows.
Yeah, and for me, I'm kind of with you on that. Had they made a different decision, you know, at the end of camp and said, we're going to keep Osweiler or something like that, we're going to go with him to start, but hey, DeShone, be ready. You never know when we're going to, you know, call on you. You never know if there's going to be an injury or when that might happen. Then fine. But again, for me, the minute you named him the starter, that should have been it. The fact that we're even having to have this discussion is yet another reason why I'm starting more and more to fully agree with you that it's time for him to go.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing to just look at the record. The record is 1-22 now. 1-22 to start your tenure with a team, even with a team that has the worst roster in the National Football League. That's inexcusable. The Jets have a horrible roster. They're winning some games. The Jaguars have a lousy roster. They're winning some games.
Aren't
you look up and down.
The division, actually?
Yeah, they are actually now. That's correct. You look at all of that. I mean, even teams that are on the rebuild have at least a Sunday or two in which the Browns, in which their fans can get a little bit excited and say, yeah, we got a chance to win this, and they go home happy, and they actually do win some games, and there's at least some competitive nature in all of this. The Jets are 3-4, and that means they're only two games out of first place, just to throw it out there. Not that they're going to catch the Patriots or anything like that. Just making a point. That's a lousy roster. So lousy, in fact, Jim, what were most people, analysts, saying that the Jets were all about at the start of this NFL season?
Trying to tank for number one?
Exactly. They're putting a lousy roster out there. They're going to ride with a bunch of lousy quarterback options, and they're going to, including Josh McCown, the former Brown, by the way, and they're going to try to get the number one overall pick. They don't care if they win or lose a game. Actually, they kind of care if they win too many. They don't want to do that. They simply want to be get the number one pick.
Side note, FYI, I think that plan is already blown out of the water for the Jets, not just because of the Browns, because the other 0-7 team, the Niners.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And then there's the Giants, by the way. They're crosstown rival that are out-tanking them.
Yeah, 1-6.
You know, so the point is there. I mean, there are some really, really bad rosters, and yet they still go out there and win games. They still go out there and provide fans with a little bit of reason to support them, a little bit of excitement, a little bit of pride, you know, being shown in your city and in your franchise. And this team doesn't even give them that. 0-7, not competitive. You've been outscored by, I want to say it's not a league high. Take that back. It's not a league high. I was going to say by 66 points, and then I saw the Colts, who've been outscored by 103 points, so I'll take that back. But one of the worst point differentials in the league.
Yep.
And, you know, and you're non-competitive, and you've done this to a rookie quarterback. Again, Hugh Jackson, you know, butchering the season is one thing. Butchering game planning is another thing. Not having an offensive coordinator because you're too stubborn and you like to call plays is another thing. But to blatantly lie about what you were going to do with DeShone Kizer when you named him the starting quarterback right when they released Brock Osweiler, to blatantly lie and say we're going to ride him through ups and downs and thick and thin and highs and lows and peaks and valleys and every other metaphor you can use here, and then to blatantly, you know, disregard that and say benched, why? Injured? Nope, just performance. Didn't like the turnovers. Okay, you're starting again. I didn't like that first half. Benched. Here comes the other guy. Okay, now you're going to start again when we go to London against one of the better defenses in the league, by the way.
Yep.
Without your left tackle, who protects your blind side,
mm-hmm.
You know, your Hall of Famer, Joe Thomas. And now the problem here, of course, is that DeShone cannot throw a ball without his neck snapping over to the sideline to see what did Coach think of that.
Yep.
What did Coach Jackson think of that throw? Was he happy or mad? Oh, damn it, I'm out again. That's how you wreck, and this is why I said at the start of the season, don't start DeShone now. Don't do it. You can wreck a young quarterback who isn't ready. You can wreck his confidence for a lifetime if you give him these experiences and they go so badly. And then, of course, you show him that you do not have his back. You do not support him through thick and thin. You show him all of those things, and you wreck him for life. Now, I'm not saying his career is over, but my God, Hugh Jackson has got to go.
Yeah, this is just messed up completely. And the fact that, especially these last couple weeks, it's in and out and benching halfway through games, and maybe you're going to start, maybe you're not. I mean, that is even more ridiculous and more damaging, as you're saying, to the confidence than just saying, okay, we tried it, you're struggling a bit, let's put you on the bench for a couple weeks or even longer so you can watch over it. Even that would have been a little more acceptable than what we're seeing right now.
Exactly.
This is the worst possible thing for a quarterback specifically's, you know, confidence going forward. And then, you know,
not even specifically, I might even say only. Yeah. There's no other position, really, you know, that can compare to this. You know, a wide receiver has the dropsies or whatever. He's just got to go out and forget about that. You know, if he gets yanked for a series or two or whatever.
Right.
He's going to go. But quarterback is, as you well know, it's the hardest position to play in all of organized team sports. And I will say that above goalie in the National Hockey League. I will say that above pitcher in baseball. I will say that above catcher. I'll say that above point guard. There is no position that equates to playing quarterback of a professional football team. You are a coach. You have to be the leader. Even if you're 21 and you're commanding 35-year-old veterans in the huddle, you have to make the decisions. You have to know where everybody else has to go and what they're supposed to do. You have to tell them to do it. You have to make decisions that change their responsibilities in a blink of an eye by audibling at the line of scrimmage based on what you see. You are the coach, even if you're a kid. And if you do that to a guy with that kind of responsibility, yank back, yank back, yank back again, I don't care who he is. He can be Peyton Manning or Deshaun Watson. He's going to get wrecked. Or Deshaun Kaiser. Well, or Deshaun Watson, since we're on it. Or Deshaun Kaiser. He's going to get wrecked.
Yeah, it's just so bad. And, you know, to me, the theme here is, Bob, as if sometimes we think this team hasn't hit bottom with their team or the organization or whatever, and they show us that, nope, there's still more to go to hit that bottom. Unreal. And by the by, if they lose four more in a row, which is entirely possible, put them at 0-11, they'll tie the Buccaneers for that 1-26 stretch. Remember 0-26?
Yep.
Expansion Buccaneers finally won one. Browns lose four more in a row, they tie that.
And I think they'll surge past that.
I do, too.
I really do. And I will laugh my fool head off when they do, because they deserve it. The entire organization, from Jimmy and D. Haslam to Sashi Brown to Paul D. Podesta to Hugh Jackson, the entire organization deserves every bit of their pain. And you know who doesn't deserve it? Deshaun Kaiser. That, you know, I feel terrible for him that he was drafted by this wreck. I feel like he would have a better chance in 31 other NFL cities to become a great pro. I feel like the minute he's up for his contract is up, he should immediately declare for free agency and go to try to find that somewhere else. Or become a disruptive force, go out a few more times on a Friday night like he did last Friday, and force a trade. You know, make them, you know, jettison him for his own personal good. I just feel like it's something he does not deserve. He really doesn't. Let me get a quick call in here before the bottom of the hour. Sam in Sylvania wants to talk about Deshaun and the way he's being, in my view, mistreated, almost flat out abused by Hugh Jackson in Cleveland. Go ahead, Sam. What's on your mind, bud?
Well, Bob, I think, you know, when this guy came out in the draft, and we've got a chance to watch him here, but when he came out in the draft, all the quote-unquote experts, the whole take on this guy is his upside was as great as anyone. He was the least NFL-ready at this point. So that was kind of the information we were getting. I watched him in the preseason play lights out. And so I thought at that time the best thing you can do for a guy who's playing well is let his confidence remain right there. You have to have a veteran quarterback there to groom this guy like they did with the McNairs and those type of guys, because that team is not capable. He's not surrounded by enough talent where he's going to go out and do anything great. So, number one, he shouldn't be starting. But if you name him the starter, don't yank him and play the yo-yo game. Let him take his knocks. You win, you lose with him, and you let him grow. They're basically, it's a worst case scenario. They're not getting the benefit from their mistake. So it's just indicative of who the Browns are as an organization from head to toe. It's not a surprise. It's just a shame, because this is a good kid with a lot of upside. He's being ruined.
And, you know, it's like you write my material for me. You're 100% right. Most experts did say he wasn't ready, and that's not a knock on him. It's that, you know, look, he's a second-round pick. He's a 21-year-old. There are some questions about his readiness, not about his willingness, not about his upside, not about his willingness to learn the playbook and his commitment to preparing and training, et cetera, or to the ability to make all the throws. But he wasn't ready to take over an offense yet at the National Football League level. They all said it. I said it. That's why, as bad as Brock Osweiler has been in his young career, at least he has started, 16, 17, 18 games between Denver and Houston, whatever it was. Let that be your guy to go out there and play while Deshaun learns the NFL game from the sidelines so that he is ready. And you're right, by the way. when he played well in the preseason, let the confidence stay high and let him believe that the next time he goes on that field, it's going to be at a high level, as opposed to watch him suffer and struggle through things that, quite frankly, a lot of 21-year-old kids, and, you know, he's a grown man, but in football parlance, he's a kid. 21-year-olds just sometimes don't handle those struggles as well, especially when you now find out that your coach that you thought had your back was lying to you.
Well, I feel like, you know, there's a bigger problem in Cleveland. It doesn't start and end with the coach, because there have been some pretty good coaches in there. There's been pretty good GMs with good track records like Holmgren in there. And I think when you look around the league and you look at the teams that are successful year in, year out, with maybe a few years here and there where they have a down year, but you look at the Patriots, you look at the Steelers, they both have different philosophies when it comes to how you draft, how you pay your players, but they have a system. They have a system in place that they don't deviate from too far because it works. And what we see with Cleveland year in, year out, their system is to try something new all the time. They do not have the people, the personnel in place. There's 1,500 players in this league total in the entire world that are good enough to play at this level. So when you look at teams like the Jets, if you've got the right system, the right coaching, you've got professional football players on that team, you can become competitive. And I'm not talking in, you know, 5 years. I'm talking in a year or two. If your staff's in place, you can show improvement because they're all professional football players. From Cleveland, what we're seeing is they don't have a system. They don't have the right anything in place to be successful, and it starts at the top.
That's exactly right. That's why, and I got to run here, Sam. Great conversation and great points that you're making all the way around. That is precisely why I said at the beginning of this week on Monday, I'm done. I'm done with this organization from the top down. In my perfect world scenario, Jimmy and D. Haslam would sell the team. Short of that, they need to fire Sashi Brown and Paul D. Podesta and Hugh Jackson and his staff and replace them with football people who know what in the living hell they're doing, not lawyers who have never done this before, not baseball scouts, and not Hugh Jackson, who is an offensive coordinator masquerading as a head coach. Get rid of all of them. They have wrecked that franchise, and they are in the process of wrecking DeShone Kizer. Let me squeeze in one more real quick from Cam in Toledo. Hey, Cam, you're on the air talking about DeShone Kizer. Go ahead.
How's it going, Bob?
Good, Cam.
Yeah, you know, I've been a Browns fan since they came back in 99. I was a young kid when they sold to Baltimore, left to Baltimore, rather. And, you know, I've never seen an organization so just clueless. I mean, just clueless. Like, and every decision that they do is just almost misinformed and just misguided. From DeShone Kizer to, you know, Tim Couch to Courtney Brown, I mean, how is it that every year they draft the wrong people?
Right.
Like every year.
Right.
Like every year.
Through multiple regimes and multiple player personnel departments and directors. And Cam, I got to run. Thanks for the call. But they do. That's why we've gone through this before. We look back and we look at Justin Gilbert and Cameron Irving and Trent Richardson and Brandon Weeden and Johnny Manziel and Barkevious Mingo and on up and down the line of guys that are like, oh, my God, why did you pick these people? They can't play. And meanwhile, Carson Wentz is becoming a first-team All-Pro. Meanwhile, Deshaun Watson is developing in his rookie season like a superstar. Meanwhile, you look at, you know, a number of different guys that you have passed on who have become great, great picks by other teams, but you decided you were going to go the money ball route and stockpile draft picks. Whether or not you got great players or just a whole bunch of mediocre players, yeah, it didn't matter to you. You were going to do it the analytics way. You know what? The hell with them. DeShone Kizer deserves so much better. Let's get a wild stat.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Looking to baseball for the Wild Stat of the Day. It has nothing to do with the World Series, which the Dodgers now lead after a Game 1 win in L.A. in 103 degrees, the hottest World Series game in baseball history. Last night out there at Chavez Ravine, but this one has to do with the Tigers. New manager Ron Gardenhier in some elite company. When it comes to managerial wins, Gardy, in his 12-year tenure with Minnesota, recorded 1,068 wins, makes him just the 10th manager of all time with 1,000 wins or more with just one team. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Dennis Manilov joins us to talk a little bit about this Kizer situation as well as the Cavaliers and the NBA in week number two as we start to see some things sorting out and working out. And how about John Wall against Lonzo Ball? That story is something we'll get into as well as we continue. It's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Right, we roll along now at 3:39. Thanks for joining us here on the Extravaganza. I want to bring Dennis Manilov onto the program. Dennis Manilov covers Cleveland sports for the Plain Dealer out there and the Cleveland.com website. D-Man, good to have you, my friend. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Hey, we initially brought you in to talk NBA because I was going to focus on mostly basketball today. We're going to get a Pistons writer on and get somebody to talk about the Cavaliers. But a couple of things have changed. Number one, we lost our Pistons guest. And number two, I got to ask you about Deshaun. This broke, you know, the decision today to start Deshaun Kizer again after yanking him for a second time happened. And so I want to get your thoughts on that before I talk to you about Dwayne Wade and about J.R. Smith and about all things NBA. Have you ever seen a head coach mangle or mistreat or abuse or ruin a young rookie quarterback as completely and thoroughly as Hugh Jackson has botched this job on Deshaun Kizer?
Well, it certainly appears to be going the way you described it. Because we're not going to know for sure, I guess, if he bungled it or not until we see what the end result is of Kizer's career. But the way it's happened so far is bizarre. And I don't recall a coach pulling a rookie twice for performance-related issues in a span of seven games, in the first seven games of the player's career. Maybe it's happened, but I don't recall it. And yes, I am confused as to why Jackson has taken this approach. Because I get the whole idea that he's trying to win. All right, I totally understand that. And right now, Hugh Jackson feels the pressure to win games, and he's 1-22 as a Browns head coach. Totally understand it. However, you can't, in my opinion, put in a player's head, a rookie quarterback's head, that he can't turn the ball over or he's going to sit. Because as soon as you do that, what is Kizer doing every time he drops back? He's looking around. He's going, oh, my gosh, I want to throw this ball, but I'm afraid if I throw it into a tight window, it's going to get intercepted. And the next thing you know, I'm going to be sitting next to the coach.
Yeah,
so
he's going to spread his neck. Every time he cocks back and fires, he's going to snap his neck over to the sideline to see if coach approved of that throw or not.
Because
that's something you can never do to any quarterback, let alone a 21-year-old kid that you're trying and that you told Dennis at the start of the season when you named him the starting quarterback that you would ride through the ups and downs with, ride through the thick and the thin and the interceptions and the touchdowns and all of it. We'll deal with all of it together. You know, knowing that's what he was told, he's been lied to. I don't know how he ever trusts Hugh Jackson again.
Yeah, it's just a strange approach to take, and you know. He even said after the Titans game, you know, if you turn the ball over, you cannot play. Well, wait, what? I mean, every quarterback turns the ball over. And I'm not saying that you should tolerate, you know, seven turnovers in a game, because obviously the quarterback at that point is up, you know, is way beyond his skis and doesn't know what he's doing, and you have to help him, all right? But this was a case, the Titans game, as an example, where, okay, he throws a bad pick at the end of the second quarter, and then coming around in the third quarter, he throws another one, back-to-back possessions. But the second one, which happened right in front of Hugh Jackson, by the way, the Browns bench, excellent trap play by Byard. He did a nice job as a safety of peeling off Njoku and jumping in front of Bryce Treggs, who was open. And Kizer just didn't expect Byard to do that. But it was a really nice play by the defender, more so than a terrible play by the quarterback. So if I'm Jackson and I see that happen in front of me, I'm like, you know what, that's a bad turnover, but I'm not necessarily going to blame him for that one. Keep going out there, keep doing what, you know, keep getting better. And instead he hooked him. So I'm just, you know, look, when we sit here and watch Kizer and we say, well, he's indecisive. Can you blame him? You know, I mean, if I were Deshaun Kizer, I'd be beyond indecisive every time I drop back because I'm afraid of what's coming if I turn the ball over.
In the announcement that he's going to be the starter in London against the Vikings, that's all we were told, is he's going to be the starter. He has not been. He has not said, has Hugh Jackson, and I don't know how it can possibly be otherwise, Dennis, that Hugh Jackson hasn't said, we're 0-7, we're clearly not going to the playoffs, we're not playing for anything here record-wise or standings-wise, we're going to learn what this kid has and doesn't have for the remainder of the season. He's going to start come hell or high water unless he's hurt. So all he said is he'll start this game. Doesn't even mean he'll finish this game. And it's because of that, Dennis, I ask you this question. Should Hugh Jackson be fired? Should he be allowed to ride that plane back from London or charter his own flight?
I was going to say, when you asked me should he be fired, I was going to say if he's 1-15 or 0-16, all bets are off, and I wouldn't expect him to necessarily return if you put up back-to-back seasons like that. But then you got specific with it about, okay, the Vikings game, if it goes south and if he pulls Kaiser again, should he be yanked at that point? Or, I mean, should Jackson be not allowed on the plane,
yeah,
so to speak? I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, I guess I want to see how this thing plays out. But I do want to say this, though. I heard you reference the one loss record. You know, I think that Hugh Jackson is in complete I need wins mode, or I'm not going to be back here next year, regardless of what patience has been expressed to me publicly or privately by Jimmy Haslam. I think you have seen a coach in recent weeks who has, and one of the reasons why we know this is because of how he's handled the QBs. He is saying, I have to win some games. So you could say, well, what difference does 3-13 make? Or, you know, how much different is 3-13 to 1-15? Or, you know, God forbid, I don't know how this could ever happen, but 4-12, as opposed to 1-15 or 0-16. It's a world of difference, I think, in the mind of Hugh Jackson. He's saying to himself, if I don't get a couple of wins here down the stretch, I'm probably not going to be back if I go back-to-back 1-15 or 0-16 seasons.
You know, I get that, and I understand that. Ruining a quarterback in the process of saving your job, though, to me, does not warrant saving your job. And that's what this would be doing. And by the way, they made the decisions. Hugh Jackson, and I don't know exactly how closely coordinated with Sashi Brown or Dee Podesta, they did this. But when they decided that they were going to start this season with three quarterbacks with zero experience. I mean, Cody Kessler started 8 games, Kevin Hogan none, DeShone Kizer none. There's not even a veteran to fall back to and say, okay, youngsters, we're going to let you learn from this guy a little bit. He's not perfect. He's a Josh McCown or even a Brock Osweiler. When they made the decision to go to war with these three guys, to me, that was a fireable offense. And now to say, well, I've got to get a win or two, and even if it means yanking this quarterback and yo-yoing him, making him look over every time he throws the ball to see if he's getting the hook now, if I've got to wreck this quarterback in order to put one of these other unproven, non-winning quarterbacks in there, well, then that's what I have to do. It's another case for firing. The man has no earthly idea how to manage a football team, let alone the most important position on the football team. The man is an offensive coordinator masquerading as a head coach. He couldn't do it in Oakland. He can't do it in Cleveland. He has no business being allowed to wreck this thing any worse than he already has.
Yeah, I hear your point, Bob, your points. I have wondered, too, about, you know, is Hugh Jackson a glorified offensive coordinator? And is the job of head coach too big for him? Certainly the job of a head coach when you're in a building situation. You know, he got a pass last year, but I think that this year, you know, the pressure was on to at least deliver some victories in a league where, you know, a league set up for bad teams to win games. Okay. You know, you look around the league and you see the Rams at 5-2, and people wouldn't call them bad anymore, but they were, you know, not too long ago.
Yeah.
The Jets, you know, the Jets were supposed to be 0-16. They've got 3 wins and they've played Belichick tough a couple of weeks ago. The Jaguars have won some games. I mean, you look around the league, and meanwhile, here are the Browns at 0-7. The only other team that's defeated, if you will, is the Niners. But so Jackson's sitting here going, and ownership is saying, hey, you got to win a few, I would think. That's what's being said. Now, in the post-game interviews, Jackson keeps saying, and even during the week, he keeps saying, well, I have this direct line with the Haslams, and you know we're communicating every day, and everything's fine. You know, that's his public front that he's implying, or not insinuating, but implying that the Haslams are okay with the process. They're patient. They're going to be patient. But his actions are indicative of something else. They're indicative of a guy who is coaching for his job, who does feel like he needs to win. And I agree with you then to say, well, number one, how did you expect to win if you had quarterbacks with no wins under their belts when you broke camp, and you got rid of Osweiler? And number two, you know, now you haven't done anything beyond that. I mean, there's nothing else to go to other than inexperienced guys. So, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
No, it really doesn't. I've given up on it. I cannot believe what they're doing to DeShone Kizer. They're absolutely wrecking him. You either don't start him day one and you let him learn a long, long time before you give him a start, or you start him and you ride with him and tell him no matter what mistakes you make, we're going to get better and we're going to suffer through what is going to be a non-playoff season anyway, so we're going to suffer through any mistakes that you make that lead to losses because that's what we have to do to develop you. And he has done neither of those things. He's got to go, but then again, Sashi Brown has to go, and so does Paul DePodesta. For constructing the worst, most pathetic roster, arguably, since the 1976 expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. D-Man, I brought you here to talk basketball, so let's get a couple of quick things in on that. Dwayne Wade is being hailed as being the most unselfish superstar, the sacrificing of his own starting job for the benefit of the team. Let's start JR. I'll come off the bench. It'll probably work better that way for everybody. My ego isn't so big that I have to be starting. And, you know, I don't like stories like this when I know them not to be right. Dwayne Wade sucked in his first three games. Dwayne Wade did not mesh well with these guys. Dwayne Wade had to see the handwriting on the wall. He was going to be sent to the bench by Tyronn Lue, who was going to put JR back in the starting lineup. So he beats him to the punch and says, hey, I'll go to the bench, and gets in and looks like a great guy here. I'm very much concerned of exactly what we said we should be concerned about coming into the season, that it's starting to take shape here. There's a whole bunch of pieces and parts that individually are very, very good that collectively aren't necessarily going to mesh well together, and it could be, you know, several months before it ever does. Are you starting to get that same feeling?
Well, not necessarily, but again, I hear your points. Just before I came on with you, I checked Cleveland.com, and Wade is listed as out tonight. Will not play tonight against the Nets because of a left knee contusion. That's an interesting, injury, if you will. I'm not sure what's going on there.
It's a back-to-back, and the 35-year-old wants to rest his legs, or they want to rest his legs, and they can't just say it's going to be a rest day, a sit day, because of all of the controversy from a year ago.
Yeah, that's true. But also, you did have, well, right, I guess you could talk about a conspiracy, because Lou was talking about how he wanted to make sure that Wade got his rest yesterday toward the end of the game in order for him to be fresh today. So at least publicly he was claiming that he was preparing for Wade to play tonight, but no go on the knee. I think it's going to be it's going to be an interesting year with Wade. You're probably going to have to pull him along. He'll be the team player and whatnot. I think he will recognize that his game is not where it needs to be, and therefore there won't be a whole lot of complaining, I don't think, publicly. He's not going to be grousing like, I have to play a set number of minutes because I'm Dwayne Wade and you're not. Mm-hmm. I think he'll recognize it, especially when Isaiah Thomas comes back, if and when he does. I mean, of course, when, but you never know with his hip. The bottom line, though, is they got Wade for one reason, and that is to be an effective player in the postseason. Give them another look in the postseason. So if you can just get him through the regular season healthy, then that's where you look for the payoff with Dwayne Wade. You're not necessarily worried about what he does you know, in October, November, December, January, February, March, have him ready for April, however that may be.
Are you worried about J.R. Smith? Another one of those cold shooting funks. What was he, 1-for-8 last night, 1-for-7 from 3? He's getting what he wanted, which is to be back in the starting lineup again. You remember he was very publicly discontent with the decision to start Wade in the first place. So he's got that job back, and he didn't do much with it yesterday. Are you worried?
No, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. It's been a while since we've seen the good J.R. You know, I can't recall a really good stretch of J.R. In a while. And I'm going to say a long time because he hasn't been here that many years, but...
I thought he played well in the finals. I thought he played well in the finals. He's one of the few guys who did, who shot well in the finals.
Okay, well, I saw a little bit of a different game than you did. I didn't think he was great by any stretch. I mean, I'm a little concerned that maybe we've seen the best Wade, the best JR, and that he's not necessarily going to come back. You know, there's still plenty of time, and he's been dealing with a back, and I think it was a back, and so he's got time to figure it out just like Wade does. But, yeah, I'm a little concerned about J.R. Smith.
Yeah, I'm just checking here to see if I'm mistaken. In the finals this year,
I didn't think he played all that great in the finals. I remember a couple of good games, but overall.
And maybe it was in the Eastern Conference Finals. I just remember because we all know that when he came back from the hand late in the regular season, he didn't have it. And it was like, man, you know, he's been waiting to come back. He's back, and he didn't. And we wondered if he would get it at all. But then he had some postseason success that looked like, there's the guy again that we used to see. In the finals, he was 18 of 31 from three. Maybe that's what I'm thinking because that's a hell of a shooting percentage. That 18 for 31 is what? That's 50, almost 60% for crying out loud. For J.R. Smith. Hold on, let me look at that again here and make sure I'm reading it right. 18 for 31 from 3, 20 for 37 overall, averaged 11.8 points in the 5 finals games.
Right.
So, at any rate, there have been runs where he has come back from his down, you know, bad J.R., as you call it, and we're looking for more of those than, the, you know, more of the latter than the former, I guess, and that's the reason.
Yeah, better than I thought in the finals. I've forgotten how accurate he was, certainly from three-point range. I remembered a couple of good games, but I thought I remembered a couple of clunkers. But I guess I'm sort of remembering all of last season as sort of a wash, the regular season,
because
he just wasn't right. And he had a lot of personal things that where he was going through, of course, as we know. But, I'm wondering if we've seen the best of J.R. Smith, you know, that it's in the past.
You know, it's interesting, just as I do it, not that it matters. I just found it funny. Four different Cavaliers took exactly 31 three-pointers in the finals. I'm just staring at the composite box. LeBron was 12 of 31. Kyrie was 13 of 31. Kevin Love was 12 of 31. And JR was 18 of 31. It's just kind of an odd little thing. LeVar Ball, you know what he's done to his son. You know the target he has put on his back. You heard Patrick Beverley laughing at him and mocking him after the opener. And now... LeVar says, as the Wizards go into play L.A. tonight out there in at Staples, LeVar tweeted something to the effect of, Wizards better watch themselves because Zoe isn't losing again this week. And Martin Gortat had a very interesting response to that. He tweeted, LOL, and again, I'm paraphrasing that part of it, John Wall going to torture him for 48 minutes, and then a whole bunch of laughing while crying or crying while laughing smiley faces, which has got a lot of people in L.A. A little bit riled up. They're a little bit angry. They think that was inappropriate. But this is what happened. This is what happens with LeVar Ball. No matter how good your son is, you have made him a target every time you open your pie hole about he's going to be rookie of the year, he's only going to work out for one team, he's going to be this, he's going to be that. Everybody wants to take him apart, and I think John Wall is going to do exactly that. Is this kid's rookie season going to be destroyed by his father?
You know what? I used to think that, Bob, and I think when I was on with you weeks ago, I probably was railing against LeVar Ball, but maybe it's my old age since then. But the more I think about it, the more I think it's funny. As long as Ball isn't – as long, you know, I'm talking about LeVar Ball. As long as Mr. Ball isn't, you know, sexist and crude and all these other things, I don't mind this you know, repartee with other teams or talking smack, you know, whatever generates interest. I mean, now all of a sudden.
Yeah, but is he doing his son any favors, Dennis? That's my thing. Probably. You know what I mean? I mean, he's writing the checks and then saying, Lonzo, go out there and cash that. I need you, to step up here or else I'm going to look bad. And these players are delighting in making Lonzo look bad.
Yeah, on the surface, you would think, no, he's not doing his son any favors, okay? But privately, I've got to believe that this conversation took place a long time ago where LeVar said to Lonzo, hey, man, I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to say what I say. I'm going to put you – You know, in the frying pan more than once with my comments, just be ready for it. And Lonzo's probably like, okay, it's just dad being dad, whatever. I don't think that Lonzo is going to be lousy if he is lousy. I don't think it's going to just be because his dad, ran his mouth. Now, having said that,
but
tonight,
it might motivate his opponents a little bit. I mean, and they're pretty much saying so.
Yeah, but I also think that there's motivation anyway. I mean, even if LeVar doesn't talk anymore, the template has already been set where you want to beat Lonzo Ball because of who he is and how he came into the league. So even if LeVar didn't say anything the rest of the way, I think Lonzo is still a target of the opposition. And you saw that with Patrick Beverley. I mean, and that, by the way, the wrong guy to open up with. All right, the junkyard dog, Patrick Beverley, he's not the guy you want to break in with as an NBA player because he will hound you and do what he did to Lonzo. So I just feel like Lonzo's like, all right, my dad's going to do what he does. People are going to get after me. I'm going to be a target anyway. I have to get used to this if I'm not used to it already. And so, okay, what happens? What happens tonight? Incredible amount of interest in Wizards v. Lakers. And that's, again, the genius of the NBA. And it's kind of where LeVar Ball is, you know, he's a gift, I think, from the heavens for the NBA, from Adam Silver, because now all of a sudden, you know, Lakers games are must-see TV on top of the fact that LeVar could say whatever he says at any point and tick off the other team. So the NBA, the masters at creating soap operas, even though the Lakers aren't going to do anything, they're not a playoff threat, they're not an NBA title threat.
Right, right.
You're going to watch them because of Lonzo and because of LeVar.
No, I get that. So he's a gift to Adam Silver, but he's a curse to his own son. And I would be willing to bet you that if we had a look at his screen multiple times per day, it's Lonzo texting, Pops, shut the blank up. You're killing me out here. You're freaking killing me. I got to guard John Wall tonight. John Wall is one of the best two-way point guards in the world. He is a tremendous defender as well as an offensive threat. And you're killing me out here, Pop. Shut up for 5 minutes. That's what I probably think is going on. D-Man, I didn't have a chance to ask you about Eric Bledsoe, but that's an interesting story. We'll catch up on next time. Thank you, my man.
Thanks, bud.
You got it. Car Stereo 1 wants you to be ready for the cold weather this year. And you know how the best way to do that? You know what it is, right? You avoid the cold weather. The cold weather that you endure while you're scraping the ice and snow off your windows while you wait for the car to warm up. You get yourself a remote car starter. From Car Stereo 1. Get that engine started long before you leave the house or building. Get it nice and toasty inside when it's time to hit the road. Steve and his staff at Car Stereo 1 will get you set with a remote car starter using your own smartphone to activate it for just $195. It's amazing. Now, if you want, you can wait. Pay about $300 for the very same thing later this winter, or you can save money and get it done now. Your remote car starter operated by your own smartphone for just $195 installed by Car Stereo 1 on Central, just a block east of Secord. Need directions? Go to carstereo1.com. Turtle. Now, coming up, we got a top of the hour sports center for which we are a little bit late, but the second hour is guest free. That means lots of time for you to call 866-240-1065 to get into those stories and more right here on The Ticket.
on their feet, waving their blue Dodger towels. 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He got it. 5 strikeouts through 3 dominant innings for Clayton Kershaw. 0-2 on the way to Josh Reddick. Kershaw drops down and freezes him with a knee-high fastball. Man, what an inning that was for Clayton Kershaw. Still tied at 1. 2 down, a man at first, and the pitch. And Turner lost a fly ball to left. It's hit pretty well. It is gone! 2-run shot, Justin Turner. Dodger Stadium erupts. First pitch, a swing and a high fly ball right center. This should do it. Puig wants it. Puig has it. And the Dodgers take game 1.
I don't know if you can decipher between a postseason start and a World Series start. I feel like every game is so much more magnified. Definitely feels good to say it was a World Series, and it feels good to say we're 1-0, and we got to come back tomorrow and do it again. Try to get that first inning under your belt. Fortunate I got out of that, and then CT hitting that home run, first pitch of the game. It almost settled us all in a little bit, I think, and just getting that momentum early is huge. And the crowd kind of feed off that. It was definitely as good a start as we could have hoped for.
Tonight was one of those nights, I think the first time in a while, that we've really seen all 3 of his pitches synced up. He just was repeating the delivery, held the velocity, was throwing the baseball where he needed to, where he wanted to. Very talented team over there, and for him to get ahead, keep him off balance, work him front to back, up and down to all quadrants, this was a special night for Clayton.
LeBron, waiting traffic to clear, he buries it for 3. LeBron goes right at the rookie, takes his time and scores. Crowder needs it, and sticks it for 3. JR could use one. Swish! He's back! Need right now, run this crew. That's his sweet spot. That's 2. Give him a backside, wide open 3. Got it! Here comes Jeff Green, open 4 for 2. Korver came to the ball, ready to fire. And drains it for 3. Korver again. Good again! And the Cavaliers are going to dribble off the clock. Had to work to get it. But that's okay.
I'm looking for my guys a little bit more when I'm starting at the point, especially in transition, kind of being more of a precision passer, not kind of, full speed ahead in transition. I'm kind of looking and seeing what's going on, getting my guys involved. Try to stay in attack mode when need be, and then once I see the high hand start going for my guys and get on the ball.
Just another opportunity to go out there and get it right for once. For me, it's about taking these opportunities that coach has been able to give me in a league where not a lot of guys get these, and maximizing it for once. I feel like I'm definitely getting better, and I'm on the path of developing myself into a guy who can win in this league. But it's about eliminating, obviously, the turnovers and the plays that are stopping us from winning games, and finally going out there and completing a game. It's been a good 3 weeks since I've been able to go out there in a fourth quarter and attempt to win a game, and I'm looking forward to having a complete game for once.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling onward are we. Hour number 2. Thanks for being with us. Hey, don't forget about our Border Battle Contest. If you have not yet entered at 106.5theticket.com for a chance to go and see the battle between Ohio and Michigan, Ohio State and Michigan, that is, but I'm just naming the states. That wasn't a slight of Ohio State. But was it a Brady Hoke that did that?
Yes.
It was Brady Hoke.
Yes, he refused to use the word state. Always just called them Ohio.
Just called them Ohio to tick them off. I wasn't doing that, but it is a border battle between the two states of Ohio and Michigan. And it's brought to you by The Ticket in Yingling, a chance for you to go to the Michigan-Ohio State game at the Big House on November 25th in Ann Arbor with limo service from Total Image Limousine. The runner-up prize, if you don't win the big one, is the trip for 2 to the Big Ten Championship game on December 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. For a chance to qualify, register one time at 1065theticket.com or text the word border battle to 64636. Those who qualify will be at our giveaway party on Thursday night, November 16th at the Blarney downtown. It's all brought to you by Yingling, the True House of Munch, Get Go Transportation, Churchill's, Country Hearth, TASS Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and your football freaks here at ESPN 1065 The Ticket. All right. A couple of notes, Kush. I found the line I was looking for just on that Kizer story.
Okay.
This is August 28, 2017. Direct quote as the announcement was made that DeShone Kizer, Toledo's own Notre Dame product, would be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Clowns, which I'm going to refer to them as often as possible. This is not just for the moment, Jackson said on a conference call to officially announce Kizer as the starter. We are going to get with DeShone and ride with him through it all. Now, that's the line. This is not just for the moment. We're going to get with him and ride through it all. However, he went on to say in the very same press conference the following. It's not over with yet. This guy has been named the starter, but he still has to earn the right to be the starting quarterback for this team week in and week out. But he has the talent and the makeup, and he has the things we're looking for. Now we just have to go get him and push him onto that next level. So that would sound like, yes, I'm naming him the starter, and I'm telling you it's not just for the moment. We're going to ride with him through it all, but here's the bipolar. Let's flip over and listen to bad Hugh Jackson. Oh, by the way, he has to earn it week in and week out. So in other words, we're not ready to ride with him through it all. We're not going to deal with the highs and the lows. He's got to earn it week in and week out. Except for we took one more bipolar turn back to the good Hugh in that same press conference. And this is why everything has to be spinning right now if you're DeShone Kizer. And I feel very bad for the kid because of this. Jackson knows that Kizer, the 52 overall pick out of Notre Dame, will suffer from the inevitable rookie growing pain in the form of interceptions, unnecessary sacks, and errant throws. And that the team might feel the pinch at times, too. But he believes the potential payoff will be huge. Quote, those things are going to happen. We're not going to blink about it. We're just going to correct it and keep moving forward. He's still a young quarterback at 21, but with a lot of talent. The only way he's going to gain that experience is by playing. So, and he reiterated that in another answer to another question on that conference call, saying obviously he's a young quarterback with a lot to learn and a lot to gain. A lot to learn and to gain a lot of experience. The only way you get that is by playing. We're all excited about that. So, Kush, in the same press conference at the start of the year, the head coach of that woebegone, horrific, terrible embarrassment of a franchise said that we're going to stick with our guy through thick and thin. Then said, but he's got to earn it week after week. But then he said, we're going to live with the errant throws and the turnovers and the mistakes because we know it's part of the development of a young quarterback. And, oh, by the way, the only way he can continue to get better is by playing. So you wonder what a guy is supposed to believe. He makes all of those statements in the press conference announcing that he's going to be the starter. And now twice in the last 3 weeks, he's yanked him because of performance reasons.
Yeah, mixed messages is part of what I take from that. You know, it sounds like on the one hand he's saying, "Yep, we named you the starter, you're going to be our guy," but then on the other hand, it sounds like there's a few clauses in that. So it feels like a little
while
bit of
saying
a
there are no clauses,
right? Exactly.
Then there's some clauses. That's the frustrating thing.
Yeah, and it has to be. It's not just frustrating to us or to Browns fans. It's got to be frustrating for Kizer. And, you know, arguably other parts of the team because, you know, the other factor that we haven't even discussed in a way on this whole thing is, you know, what are the rest of the offensive, is this offensive unit thinking? They don't know who the heck's going to be under center seemingly at any given moment.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that was a running joke before Joe Thomas went out now with his season-ending injury.
Right.
And by the way, he had surgery. It was a running joke. He was, doing interviews in the preseason about all the different guys that he has, that has called the signals behind him in his, 11-year career since he was a first-round draft pick in 2007. All of these years, you know, have gone by, and he's had so many different voices back there, and he was asking you to name them all. And he did a remarkable job of that, by the way. But the point is, the rest of the offense doesn't know who's going to be there. So there's no confidence in whoever's in the huddle because they all know that they're just a blink away from being replaced as well. So... Just a very strange and unfortunate turn of events out there. All right, want to shift gears a little bit and get into a couple of other things with respect to the NBA. Did you see the Eric Bledsoe story that I did not get
a chance to talk to us about? Yes, I have seen that.
Eric Bledsoe is a tremendously talented point, or we'll just say guard, because he can play the point, he can shoot too, from the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns, as you know, are a train wreck. You might argue that they are as bad. This is when I say that the Browns or Clowns organization is the worst franchise in all of team sports. You have to understand, right now the Phoenix Suns could rival them for that, except for the fact that this is all very, very recent. The reason the Browns are in that title is because they have been such a joke for such a long time. Longevity matters when you're making a statement like this. And this is a very, 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 very long time coming as far as disorganization and everything that they have going back really to 1995 before they moved, or when they moved, in 1993 when they cut Kozar, and everything that, all of the dysfunction that has followed. But anyway, Eric Bledsoe, playing for the dysfunctional Phoenix Suns, tweeted over the weekend the words, "I don't want to be here." To say that it was a shocking statement is an understatement. It's pretty blatant and plain. He's referring to his job, because the Phoenix Suns not only started the season 0-3, they lost three games in blowout fashion,
yep,
including their worst loss in their history in the opener, and then another 30 or 40 point loss or something like that in game three, which preceded the "I don't want to be here." That "I don't want to be here" message preceded by just a few hours, it appears, the firing of Earl Watson as the head coach out there in Phoenix. Bledsoe, immediately criticized by so many for just such blatant disrespect of his employer, the fans in that city, "I don't want to be here," tried to cover his tracks with one of the more classic all-timers, to be honest with you. Instead of the "I got hacked, I didn't really say that, somebody else picked up my phone and did that," or "somebody hacked into my account and did that," which would have been kind of common. A lot of people, a lot of guys, you know, celebrities have done the old "I was hacked" routine. He says, "No, I didn't mean I don't want to be here in Phoenix. It's just that I was at the beauty salon. Yeah, yeah, that's the ticket. I was at the beauty salon with my girlfriend, and I really hated being there. So I tweeted, I don't want to be here." Which, give him an A for effort on that one.
Yeah.
Give him an A for style points, sure, you know, and creativity. "No, I just didn't want to be at the beauty salon." Now, normally, normal people would do what? They would follow something like that up with an emoji or two about where they are. I don't know if there's a little blow dryer emoji or something like that. And make it pretty clear what he's talking about. But the GM of the Sun said, "Yeah, KMA. No, you didn't. That is not what you meant. You already made it clear in the offseason you wanted to go someplace else." He wants to play for a winner. Now, why do I focus on this story? In addition to the obvious, which is the hilarity of the beauty shop reference, Eric Bledsoe, Jim, I don't know if you realize this, is repped in terms of his agent by Rich Paul.
Yep, saw that.
Rich Paul is the agent for?
LeBron.
LeBron James.
And a few others, too.
And Tristan Thompson. And I think Dwayne Wade. And maybe some other people who are with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Fueling some speculation, if not, you know, outright excitement or enthusiasm, but speculation. Could Eric Bledsoe be able to work a trade to be sent to Cleveland? A team that already has a whole bunch of new bodies from a whole bunch of new places, or different places, I should say. Wade comes in from Chicago. You got Derrick Rose in from New York. You got Isaiah Thomas from Boston. You got Jay Crowder from Boston. You got Jose Calderon from wherever he just came from.
I think he was on the Lakers last year, but whatever.
A lot of new bodies and a lot of different places all coming together to unite in one place and try to figure out some chemistry. And I'll talk about the likes of Eric Bledsoe. Kush, what do you think? Is it something that the Cavaliers could and should pursue? I don't know the status of his contract, how many years, what dollars.
I just looked that up. He has signed 14-some-odd million this year, and he's signed through next year at $15 million.
All right. So, again, I don't know. Obviously, numbers have to match to make NBA trades mm-hmm. work. I don't know what kinds of pieces and parts the Cavaliers could put together along with maybe draft picks. They're certainly not going to give up their Brooklyn Nets draft pick. Now that it's even more likely that that Brooklyn is going to, you know, lose even more games because Jeremy Lin is out. You saw that. He's out for the season.
Yes.
And he's a 14-point-a-game scorer. They're going to be worse than even they thought they would be. That's going
Although
to be
Although they started off okay so far. I think they're 3-1 coming
yeah,
into this
one.
Yeah,
but we know how the season is going sure. to be for that group. They're going to have an awful lot of balls in that machine as far as the lottery goes. And so the Cavaliers aren't going to give up that. But just kind of curious if that's something, you know, that people would welcome. I wonder if, you know, Jeff Green, there's another new face. You know, look at all these guys who are there who are new, if they could stand to take yet another new player. He's a very talented one. Very, very good player, does a lot of really good things well. But number one, would he fit from an X's and O's standpoint? Where would he play and how much would he play? You got J.R. Smith in the backcourt. You got Dwayne Wade in the backcourt. You got Derrick Rose in the backcourt. And sooner or later, you're going to have hopefully Isaiah Thomas in the backcourt. That's an awful lot of backcourt people. Calderon, again, is there, at least for now. Would there be any room for a guy like that from an X's and O's standpoint? And then also, would you want a guy whose personal attitude is so self-serving? And I'm not trying to be a jerk, but there's not really too many other ways to say that or see that. That statement, I don't want to be here at the expense of the team. It's all about me. Do you want a guy like that kind of influencing the locker room in any way, shape, or form? What do you think? Is there a chance that Eric Bledsoe works out a deal or gets a deal worked out so he comes to the defending Eastern Conference champions?
Well, I do think that there's going to be some kind of deal worked out at some point. I mean, the Suns are a complete train wreck.
And they've said he's played his last game for them.
More or less, yes. So it's on the Suns. They have to do something, which I think would help the Cavs in a possible negotiation. They absolutely, Kobe Altman should absolutely be in contact with these guys. I do disagree with you, Bob. I think the Brooklyn Nets pick should be part of what's involved if the Cavs are going to try to swing a deal. And for X's and O's, in a twisted way, when you have LeBron James on your team, as we saw with their lineup, their starting lineup just last night, and probably will again tonight because Derrick Rose is going to be out. Incidentally, just breaking, Dwayne Wade's going to be out too. A little bit of a knee thing going on, apparently.
Yeah, Dennis and I talked about that a little bit.
Right.
I don't know if it's a pretty dubious injury. Knee contusion.
Right,
okay,
that's what it's labeled as. And for what it's worth, he had a decent game, I thought, as a bench guy yesterday. But from an X's and O's, what I mean by
11,
this.
Didn't he have,
yes.
Like
yeah, it was his first double-digit scoring game as a Cav.
Yeah.
But the X's and O's, I'm not as worried about because, remember, we're in an age where it's not as traditional anymore in terms of some positions. And just take the Cavs last night. LeBron literally played the point forward spot. He was the distributor.
He started at point last
night. Exactly.
He started at the one. JR started at the two. They put Tristan back in the starting lineup at the five. Crowder to the three, and Kevin Love went to the four. So that's how they started last night while Derrick Rose is out.
But so from the X's and O's, whether he's a point guard or a shooting guard, when you have LeBron James on your team is bordering on irrelevant. Yes, an ideal situation when everybody's healthy, when the calendar turns 2018, you'd like to see Thomas as the starter, Rose come off the bench, and then you have JR and Wade as your starter and bench in the backcourt. That'd be the most ideal. But because of the way LeBron plays, you can mix and match up those differently. Have LeBron in a situation like a point forward and go get two shooters, for example, in your backcourt. That's part of the reason I like that they, we know JR is going to, and you talk about this with Maniloff, JR is going to have his hot and cold games. Yesterday was one of those cold ones. Give him a game or two and he'll suddenly have one of those. He's 6 of 7 from downtown. That's just how JR Smith is.
Yes, he does. That's how he rolls.
So I'd like a guy like a Bledsoe. It doesn't have to be necessarily a traditional point guard. The gag is, on top of the pick to make the money work, which is, of course, a thing in the NBA, who else would you have to send? I mean, if you're Phoenix, you're not going to want, a Wade or even a Calderon or somebody like that. You might have to include maybe a CeeDee Osman type of player in such a deal. But I definitely think Kobe Altman needs to at least be making those calls because given the situation in Phoenix, whoever's calling Phoenix would actually have a little more leverage.
To throw this out there for the sake of this conversation, earlier today, and I don't know if you saw this, but earlier this morning, actually, the Suns GM, Ryan McDonough, called out Eric Bledsoe and his agent, Rich Paul.
I did hear about this, yes.
Yeah, as we mentioned, who represents LeBron and also John Wall and Ben Simmons and Tristan Thompson and a number of other people. In an interview on sports radio out there in Arizona, McDonough addressed Bledsoe's tweet on Sunday that read, "I don't want to be here." That was posted moments before the organization fired Coach Earl Watson. I thought it was hours before. It's being reported here by ESPN as moments before. Okay. "I was certainly surprised by it and disappointed by it. I think Eric is a good person, but I think he's unfortunately gotten some bad advice and is listening to the wrong people. I think generally anytime you sign a contract, it doesn't only work one way. It works both ways. And for a guy with years on his contract to say or intimate he didn't want to be here anymore, I don't find that to be appropriate, and I think that if he says he wants to be a leader, that's the opposite of what a leader does and the opposite of what leadership is. So I think that's all I'm going to say about that." The 27-year-old point guard met with Suns owner Robert Sarver and McDonough during the preseason and requested a trade then, according to ESPN. Frustrated with the direction of the team, its whiffs in free agency and questionable personnel moves during his 4 years with the franchise, Bledsoe expressed that it was time to move on. sources said. Bledsoe was then told by management that the team had underperformed ever since he was given the starting point guard responsibilities. I think, McDonough said again today, just my opinion, the shift comes from the contractual demands made by his representatives. And that's what I was referring to when I said I think he got some bad advice. He later tripled down on his criticism of Bledsoe's representation, saying Eric is a talented player and a good player, but like I said, I think he's being a little bit misguided at the moment with some of the advice that he is getting. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to say anything negative about Rich Paul because I don't know how he does his job or how he handles these kind of negotiations or what he'll do in response to McDonough. But I got to tell you, that's about as strong as it gets, considering the fact that this is from a GM who knows full well that Rich Paul is a power player. Representing LeBron James alone makes him a power player in this game and in this business. When you represent the likes of LeBron James and John Wall and Eric Bledsoe and others the way he does, you are rolling the dice by publicly ripping him as much as McDonough and the Kings are, knowing that if you want to sign free agents later on, or even negotiate rookie contracts, you might be at a negotiating table with Rich Paul. That's a pretty doggone bad situation between the player, the general manager slash owner in Phoenix, and the agent. This whole thing is blowing up in a whole lot of faces, and it's one of the reasons, quite frankly, I don't know that I would want to be in this Eric Bledsoe conversation, Jim. What if McDonough is right? What if this is a Rich Paul thing? What if this is a Rich Paul giving him bad advice? He's worth more than what he believes or what the team believes, et cetera, et cetera. And that could cause a bit of consternation by the time he would arrive at a place like Cleveland.
And it possibly could. And I wouldn't say it's outside of the realm of possibility for Rich Paul and his camp in this case. We've seen some things like this in the past play out. But at the same time, the Suns don't have all that much leg to stand on and be all outraged. I mean, a lot of this is a 3.5 year complete disaster from the Phoenix Suns in essentially all their decisions. He's not the first person, by the way, in the last couple years of any talent to be on Phoenix to demand a trade. That's why Goran Dragic is on the Heat. They had their 3-point guard set up and essentially got rid of all three of them, of which Isaiah Thomas, now with the Cavs, was one of them. One of the two Morris brothers, one of which played for the Pistons last couple years, got caught up in all this. So don't try to make it as if the Suns are standing on, you know, clean ground here. They have completely messed up this organization with bad decision after bad decision, firing coaches, trading away the wrong type of guys, and getting little back, you know, in return. So it's not surprising that a higher profile player would come out and start saying these things. Again, I'm not trying to, you know, proclaim Bledsoe or even Rich Paul as any innocent in this, and those are strong words that you mentioned from the Suns brass, but they're not anywhere near innocent in all of this either.
I would not disagree. They're not. They are a wreck. There's no doubt they have been mismanaged by the likes of McDonough. My only point in response would be, as I said, that there must have been something very, very seriously bad about the relationship with Rich Paul and Bledsoe that they would, knowing the track record you just laid out, you know, as far as some of the decisions they made and some of the players that they've lost because of the way they're run, for them to go on that rant or for him to go on that rant against Chris Paul like that, it must have been a very, very serious problem because they know that they're going to have to, as I said, negotiate with agents like Rich Paul to get new guys in there to turn this thing around. And you are not going to get any favors when it comes to the negotiation for players by the likes of Rich Paul or other agents who are friendly with Rich Paul by trashing him and the player in such a way. So either the Suns are just so livid they don't care about what bridges they burn here, or how about that, the Suns burning, or no pun intended, or they are in the right, and they really feel like you people don't have any understanding whatsoever about how bad Rich Paul is at this and what he has done here, what he has demanded, and how utterly unprofessional Eric Bledsoe is. We are happy to be getting rid of him. And oh, by the way, he wants a trade so bad, we're not going to give him the Kyrie Irving treatment. We're not going to trade him to a contender the way Irving got to go where he wanted to go, to a place like Boston. I can see them just shipping him to Siberia, NBA Siberia. the likes of which might be, as we've talked about many times, places like Sacramento or, you know, given their current state, even though it's not Siberia, it's a great place to live in Chicago. But, you know, a franchise that's going to be horrible for a while to come, you know, to the Mavericks or something like that.
I was just going to say that despite Mark Cuban being there, this is a blatant downtime and we're at the end of Dirk's career. Dallas is about to become an outpost.
Send him to a place where he's going to lose 50 or 60 games just to spite him. I mean, that's how ugly this one has gotten.
And for what it's worth to tag on to all of that.
Which is why, by the way, like I said, I don't think that the Cavaliers will be an option here. They're not going to reward him by sending him to go play with Cleveland where he can go to the finals.
And actually, even less than that, I think the biggest reason that you won't find the Bledsoe trade probably happening is Adrian Wojnarowski, his tweet from yesterday afternoon. The Suns pursue, they want a young player with significant talent for Bledsoe. The Cavs, outside of offering that first-round pick that goes to the Nets as part of a deal, they don't really have that, as we know.
I still don't think you even come close to parting with that, by the way, Jim. I just don't. The Cavaliers are old. Do we agree on that?
Yes.
I mean, the Cavaliers with LeBron.
There's no argument on that. They have
LeBron in his 15th year. Dwayne Wade at 35 and looking every bit of it.
I saw a number the other day. They're the only team in the NBA whose average age is over 30.
Thank you.
For a player.
Thank you. So, to me, they have to start thinking about, you know, or continue to think about life beyond the LeBron years. You know, I mean, they really do. They have to think about young stars. You know, maybe Zizic, you know, the young center they got in this deal with Kyrie will be a player for some time to come. But try to think of young players on this team that will make them competitive or keep them competitive in 2020, 3 years from now, or in 21 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think they hold on to that pick. And they hope it's number one or two in the lottery or, you know, in the draft that they perhaps win the lottery, have success in the lottery, and they go get themselves a superstar to really build around for the post-LeBron years. They are old, and when you get old in the NBA, you get old in the NBA quick. It just catches up to you in a hurry.
It does.
I think they need a star to build around. They were hoping that would have been Kyrie, who's only 25.
Right.
But we know how that ended, so I don't think they give that pick away at all, Jim.
Yeah, and
not for a 27-year-old Eric Bledsoe.
And at the end of the day, you know, when everybody's healthy on the Cavs, especially meaning Thomas in this case, I like a lot of what they have, you know, right now, especially if you keep a Dwayne Wade, for example, you know, on the bench. But at the same time, you wonder if something's going to happen, especially because if you're Phoenix, whether you trade him to a contender or the NBA version of a Siberia, you're also not going to want to have this hanging over for weeks and weeks on end with this guy not playing while he's still under contract for you. So I do expect in the next week or two something to happen on this front. So the question for the Cavs is, do we want to take the approach that you're suggesting, which is a very legitimate one and one that Colby Altman and the rest of that crew needs to consider, or do you keep the mode of we still have to do everything we can for this probable one more chance this year?
Yeah.
And of course, as we know, with Gordon Hayward being lost in that season opener, it keeps the door more open for the Cavs to make sure they're at least in the finals.
I get the point you're making. I'm just going to say flat out, to me, considering the fact that he's a point guard and you just traded Kyrie for Isaiah and you have Derrick Rose, and as you saw last night, LeBron can play point, I don't think you sacrifice that pick for another point guard, even one like Eric Bledsoe. I just don't think that's something you can do to even continue this run right now or this one more time.
It is absolutely something that they, you know, that is there. And the only, to me, the only difference in terms of what you just said and having Thomas versus Bledsoe, the only two small differences are, one, Bledsoe could play for you right away, where we're still probably waiting until January something for Isaiah Thomas.
And then what happens when he gets back?
Right, that's obviously, it would have to be a consideration.
No. You don't get to do that. That's politics. No. What happens when he gets back, Tyronn Lue? Tyronn Lucian? Tyronn Kushlu? What do you do, Kush?
I don't know.
You've got Ty Jim Kushlu. What do you do when it's February and here comes the 29 point per game scoring all-star from the Boston Celtics in the Kyrie trade, healthy, full a bill of health, 100%, hip is ready to go, quick as all get out. Eric Bledsoe has been your starting point guard with Derrick Rose backing him up. Do you send Bledsoe to the bench? Do you cut Rose? Do you tell Isaiah we're winning with Bledsoe? You're going to come off the bat. I mean, there is no correct answer to that question.
No, there isn't. And they'd be overloaded.
This isn't like baseball where you can never have too many starting pitchers.
Right, right. No,
you can have too many starting point guards.
Sure, no, and that's an absolutely legitimate point, and probably one of the main reasons why at the end of the day the Cavs won't end up doing anything on this front.
No, that's why I don't think it's going to be even a possible consideration. Hey, Kush, guess what?
What do you got?
I got something fun here, and it's just not working quite well. I always seem to glitch this for some reason. Let's try one more time here. Kush, guess what?
What?
It's still not working. Oh, my goodness gracious. Hold on a second. Let me try one last time. Oh, yeah, I gave you a hint like that. There it is.
Wonderful technology.
There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
I hate that program, doggone it. That program on my audio system. It glitches every so often at the wrong time. The sounds that you hear, of course, are the sounds of Kansas. And I'm giving you those sounds because I want to give you these tickets. Kansas is coming to the Stranahan Theater on November 4th, and you can be there. A pair of tickets to go see Kansas if you are caller number 6 right now. Caller number 6, 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. You want to go see Kansas? It's on us. Good luck.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, Metallica, probably not what we're looking for here, Jim, as I tell everybody who won the Kansas. Yeah, that's...
I close my eyes.
That's a little better.
Only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes, a curiosity.
Robert Zechman is going to go see The Dust in the Wind at Stranahan. Does it get windy in the Stranahan? I don't think so.
No, really. I don't think so either.
No?
No.
Probably not. But anyway, he's going to be there singing and swaying to Dust in the Wind. He's from Bloomdale. He got the Kansas tickets. I believe we have 3 pairs more of those.
Indeed,
we'll give those away the rest of the week, tomorrow and Friday. Probably 2 tomorrow and 1 on Friday to make sure. That all of them are indeed taken advantage of. So Kansas at the Stranahan on November 4th. Congratulations to Robert. Hey, real quick, yesterday, Jim, we were talking about fandom of,
yes,
of various teams and whether or not in 2017 America, in a world of social media and personalized highlights, team notes, news articles that you can do through the internet. I mean, you know, for example, I have a lot of different apps on my phone. One of them is the ESPN app. One of them is the Fox Sports app. Another one is the CBS app. I mean, all the different sports networks all have different
right,
apps.
Right, yeah.
And almost every single one of them ask you to set up your favorites.
And
you know,
they do.
Your favorite leagues, your favorite teams, and what do you want? Do you just want scores? Do you want notes? Do you want updates to come across your phone notifications every time there is a score in the game, you know, for football, for example, or quarterly scores for the NBA? All these you could personalize it all, right? And we talked about that a little bit. Like, for me, it's hard. I got to tell you, I mean, in all seriousness, it's hard because what we do here where we're located in Toledo or Northwest Ohio, everything is doubled. Here's my list of favorites, okay? You ready for this? This is on my ESPN app. These are all the teams that I follow because of where we are. You ready?
Okay.
Browns, Lions, Steelers, which is kind of the point of all this, because yesterday we got calls and talking about, you know, who are fans of which teams.
Right,
Steelers
yes.
Steelers fans called here and said, you have no idea how many Steelers fans there are here in Northwest Ohio. So I got Browns, Lions, Steelers, Rockets, Falcons, Toledo BG, Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan State, Cavaliers, Pistons, Indians, and Tigers. And for the sake of it, I don't know why. I guess because it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the Royals were the class of the division, and I wanted to keep tabs on them. I had the Royals in there, too, so I could delete them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how long my list of favorites is, because we have to have all of the teams from Cleveland, all of the teams from Detroit, all of the teams from Columbus, all of the teams from Ann Arbor, all of the teams from Toledo, and all of the teams, well, the teams from Bowling Green as well. So, by the way, that's football and basketball for all those Michigan. I got Michigan football, Michigan basketball, Ohio State football, Ohio State basketball.
About the only things I could think of that you didn't have in there were Red Wings and Blue Jackets.
Right, and that's just because I don't do hockey that much.
Right.
It's just not my favorite thing. I do it when there's news there and there are special things happening.
Otherwise,
it's not a daily thing for me to look at the hockey scores, et cetera.
And otherwise, I can pretty much vouch that that's essentially what my favorites are, except replace Steelers with Virginia Tech.
Okay, just because of your alma mater.
Yep.
And I understand. Point to that is, if you're a regular person, you don't have to follow all of those teams because you're doing a talk show in our particularly geographical part of the world here, Jim, where we are surrounded in this area by all of those teams that we should know something about.
Right.
You, let's just say you're a fan of the teams in Detroit. You can have nothing but Detroit Lions, Tigers, Pistons, and Red Wings news come to your phone and be on your web feed, your internet feed, your social media feed. You can just surround yourself with it. And if you can do that for Detroit, you can also do that for Los Angeles, if you happen to be, or Dallas. Let's say you like the Dallas Cowboys, and that's your team. The hell with the Lions, hell with the Browns, hell with the Steelers. You're part of America's team. You can just act like you are in Dallas by surrounding yourself with all of that news. It's just new. It's 2017. All of that was just a recap of yesterday, by the way, and I think the climactic line here is going to be completely overplayed. Because of all of that, it's just I wanted to point out to the Steelers fans in Northwest Ohio that you've got a problem on your hands. We had those callers yesterday who talked about this. The Steelers have just benched Martavis Bryant, who has been making all kinds of really, really bad noise on social media about his teammates, about his role in the Steelers offense, wanting to be traded. And they have finally had enough, even after he was talked up. And, Kush, this to me is just the height of unappreciation. He missed the entire 2016 season the way Josh Gordon did because of multiple drug offenses. They stuck with him. They brought him back. They paid him.
Yep.
And they put him back in the lineup. And now he is saying, how come I'm not getting enough balls? Antonio Brown's getting too many balls. Juju Schuster-Smith is getting too many balls. He has gone just a little bit too far, and they have benched him now. So some problems in Steeler land, and we'll talk more NFL and college football as well on tomorrow's program. All right, that's it. All the time I've got. Sorry about the short segment, but that's the way the clock goes. Mike Miller is not in today. Jim Cushlin is, however, so drive time is still coming your way, right?